Hello, everybody. My name's Liz. You might know me usually as the Director of Religious Education, but I'll be leading the service today along with Brad. Right now, everyone. And now we will extinguish our chalice. Thank you, Brad. As Winston Churchill said, the farther backward you look, the farther forward you can see. We can absorb that wisdom by living through what's behind us now so that we can see where we're about to go, knowing that even as we extinguish our chalice, the light of our community guides us. Today, most of our music is going to be videos, and our audio's a little wonky, but you know, it's kind of a weird service, so you'll be fine.
I have our closing reading titled In the Beginning by Nigel Hastelau. Somewhere in the empty void of nothing, someplace, not a place, everything was not. Nothing happened everywhere and nowhere. In the height and the depth, in the length and the breadth of absence, of darkness, in the vacuum, somewhere, nowhere, something must have happened. Have happened? Or is happening right now? Something, not nothing, in infinity, of time and space, a moment, a flicker, a pulse, a spark, a definite something. There, there, then, and now, and now. A shiver, a speck, a nanosecond, a spasm, a stab of light. Plucked from nothing unseen, and yet the void gave an unforced shudder, a twitch, a sound, something upon a time, out of nothing. First moment of something, a noiseless noise, a sightless sight, a dusting before stardust. Nothing comes from nothing.
For literally thousands of years, well over 3,000 years based on records, but possibly even longer, the images that comprise the 78-card tarot deck have existed in some capacity. The origins of the four suit cards also were the inspiration for just regular playing cards, originated in China, and the 12 major trump cards in Europe. Divination decks have been used for hundreds of years in modern context to give insight and meaning to the events in our personal lives. I like to think of the tarot cards the way I think of astrology, which is that it can be a tool we use to give ourselves a boost of insight into why something might be the way that it is. The same way we might use mythology or superstition to explain things. If you've ever had a tarot reading or read your daily horoscope, then you know it's not always accurate. It can feel vague and impersonal. Maybe it's like acupuncture or hypnosis, where it only works if you believe it works. But isn't all spirituality tinted with a bit of suspension of disbelief? Whether you believe in the power of divination or not, there are lessons to be learned in the stories of the images that come up in the tarot. A standard tarot deck is made up of 56 minor arcana cards, similar to the 52-card deck of a four-suit, the four-suit playing cards. So there's an extra card for each suit. And there's 22 major arcana cards based off of the 12 original trump cards. These cards symbolize the masculine and feminine, the planetary bodies, the concepts of fate and justice, even death, magic, and perspective. The 12th card of the major arcana is the Hanged Man, often depicted as a young man with a halo hanging upside down from a wooden post or branch by his ankle, his other leg bent, hands bound, eyes wide open. It's easy to see why sometimes this imagery conjures feelings of unease and dread. It's reminiscent of the crucifixion of Christ. In many artistic interpretations, the figure is bound, which suggests they had to be placed there, most likely against their will, and in many instances, they're fighting for their life, facing death or worse. So what lesson is there in this imagery? Consequences, punishment, the sickly vision of lowering someone into a vat, the creepy yet iconic version of the vampire in bat form hanging from the rafters. Even if we see the figure right side up, something about it can be unsettling. And of course it is. Think of yourself in this position, your body taut but supported, the blood rushing to your head. You open your eyes and for a moment are completely disoriented. Your heart races. You have to maybe fight an instinct to immediately right yourself. What an incredible metaphor for what it feels like to change your perspective, to have your mind changed, to be presented with new information that forces you to look at something a different way, that challenges your worldview and makes you feel uncomfortable. Upside down isn't always bad. Sometimes flipping an image upside down allows artists to more closely copy that image because they're only looking at the shapes and not distracted by the overall picture. Researchers even use upside down maps from as early as the 70s to put emphasis on different areas of the globe, or use upside down maps to spot places in cities that might be lacking services because we tend to put importance at the top of things, like north, or the top billing of movie posters. So at the top of the Hanged Man, we have his bound ankle. In a very few depictions of the Hanged Man, it would be almost impossible for the figure to reach this state on his own. And what it literally represents is being suspended, a pausing, a great rest, as we sometimes refer to it, the eye of the storm. The figure is still and calm, even as chaos may be all around him. He knows that he can't do anything about it. He can't free himself. He may be afraid, but all he can do is accept his position and open his eyes and look at the world as it is now, upside down. The Hanged Man is often depicted hanging off of living wood, not just a post or a cross, but a tree, a branch, alive and full of leaves. This often simply represents life, and he's perhaps growing in the wrong direction. The Hanged Man's legs often and originally form the symbol of the Philpott cross. This symbol is a great astrological symbol of 17 blocks with the sun at the center, the four elements of each at the end, and the symbols of the zodiac signs within. This symbol of the Philpott cross is ancient. It's used by many cultures, often to depict cycles, the movement of the sun or air. It's even theorized to be depictions from ancient cultures as comets, going as far back as 2000 BCE. In Chinese and Japanese characters, this symbol is used to emphasize longevity. In the context of the Hanged Man, we might interpret this as part of the cycle of life, the turning inward, looking at things another way, a vital part of the path that leads to spiritual awakening. One thing we can say for sure about the Hanged Man is that he is not afraid. His expression suggests one of acceptance, despite his position and the fact that he may be there against his will. It's the same face that Neo makes in The Matrix when he finally accepts he's the one. It's the face of Truman as he discovers the staircase across the ocean in The Truman Show. It's probably the face that the escaped prisoner makes as he stands in the shadows of the cave, ready to enter the sun for the first time. It's the face of Christ at the Last Supper, even as he knows it is his last. It's the momentary calmness as one person is about to accept a very different reality than they have ever known before and move forward in a completely different world than they have lived in their whole lives. This is emphasized by the halo around the hangman's head, the symbol of spiritual enlightenment and purity. This person is on the verge of great self-discovery. And when we think of the major arcana cards as a story, this makes sense. Justice is card 11, so we're faced with new information. We must consider what is actually true and ethical. The hanged man faces that truth, and after him is death, not necessarily his death, but a death of the old world view as he moves towards balance and acceptance. There are so many reasons that this message might be important to us. In this position, we might feel like a criminal or a prisoner or even shame in our old ways of thinking. But it's the growth that is the most important part of the message. When we think of it in the context of our own religion, the wider context of Unitarian Universalism, even beyond WUF, we can see how this position can feel like a punishment or a deep rending heartache to traditionalists and even to people who find change painful. But as we embrace personal growth and evolve as a species in community with one another, as we widen our circles of love and trust, turning our perspective upside down can give us the calm strength of the hanged man. This is a way we can find ourselves in love with the world, even as it becomes something we no longer recognize, so long as we have faith in the balance of all things and that nothing at all is permanent. Now is the time for joys and sorrows. If you have a joy or a sorrow, and you would like to drop a stone into our water, you can rise and walk down the aisle on the left and come around, and you're welcome to drop a stone in the water and then enter back to your seat on this side. And let the water hold your heaviness or lightness as you come around.
And now please join us for to sing "The River is Flowing." The words will be on the screen. Or not. Lawmakers all across the South have passed extreme legislation banning best practice medical care for transgender youth. As a result, 75% of transgender youth in the South now live in a state where a ban on gender-affirming care has passed. Today we are collecting for this quarter's Donate the Basket. We are supporting the Southern Trans Youth Emergency Project, a new regional effort by the Campaign for Southern Equality to provide rapid response support directly to the families of youth who are impacted by anti-transgender healthcare bans. The project, in close partnership with state and local organizations, provides cash grants and patient navigation support, has developed a regional referral network of providers in accessible states, and provides accurate information to affected families to ensure that youth can access the care they need and deserve. You may find them online at southernequality.org/STYEP. Please join me in our affirmation of gratitude and giving.
Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others.
Now is the time for all ages. If there are any children still in the sanctuary who would like to come sit up at the front and get a better look at the picture, you're welcome. But I think all of our kids were already sent to their class. Today's story is called Elephant in the Dark. It's based off of a poem by Rumi, and it is retold by Mina Hava-Harbin. Pictures by Eugene Yelchin. The merchant, Ahmad, had brought a mysterious creature all the way from India. The news spread fast through the village. What could the huge beast be? The villagers ran to the merchant's barn next to his house to see the strange creature, but the doors were locked, and the merchant, tired from his journey, was sound asleep. The rowdy crowd woke the merchant. He stuck his head out of the window and shouted, It's too dark in the barn to see anything. Go home and let me sleep. But no one went home. Instead, they decided to see the beast for themselves. The first villager snuck into the dark barn. He tripped on a bucket of water and fell on the animal's long, slithery nose. This startled the villager and set him running. Outside, he gathered himself, puffed his chest, and said, "The creature is like a snake." Next, a very short man entered, and he reached very slowly into the dark. He wrapped his arms around one of the animal's legs and rushed out to report. "People, the creature is not like a snake at all. Oh no, it's round and tall, like a tree trunk." A third villager climbed inside the dark barn, and the beast swept its huge ear against her face. And the woman ran out. "The creature is neither a snake or a tree trunk," she panted. "It's like a fan, a huge, floppy fan." The three villagers argued excitedly. Others scratched their heads and disagreed. Each offered such different views. The fight escalated, and the villagers stole into the dark barn to find out the truth for themselves. "It's like a leathery jug of water." "No, it's like a skinny, hairy paintbrush." "It's definitely sharp, just like a plow." "It sounds just like a horn." All day long, they called each other names and fought to prove each other wrong. Into the night, no one listened, but everyone shouted and shoved. When the sun finally rose the next morning, the merchant Ahmad led the beautiful, gentle creature to the river. But everyone was still too busy fighting to notice the large gray elephant, and no one noticed that they each only knew a piece of the truth. And now we will sing No Children from the Sanctuary. Okay. Thank you.
join me in the affirmation. You'll see it on our slide.
Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful and what is wondrous. Let us open our minds to learn what is true,
what is mysterious.
Let us open our hearts to love
one another and our neighbors. And now our opening reading, titled Looking Back, Genesis 19, by Alwyn Marriage. So much was left behind, of course. I felt regret. That's why I glanced back, just for one last sight. I had repeatedly warned my husband not to let himself be influenced by his guests last night, but as it happened, I was given no say. Then when he offered our daughters to the men instead of the strangers, "Here, have your way with these young virgins," he called out. But then disaster fell on them, and on the wicked city, partly as punishment for their attempted rape. Now I'm paralyzed by bitterness and pity instead of gratitude that we made our escape. It didn't dawn on me that this was my own fault until I realized that the bitter taste was salt. And now we will light our chalice to start the day, if Liz would please do the honors. And let's just take a few moments, especially, and stand up and say hello to each other, especially if there's someone new you haven't met before. Please take a few moments and just introduce yourself. And well, good morning and welcome to the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are affectionately also known as WOOF. My name is Brad Hewitt. I use the pronouns he, him, and his, and it's my privilege to serve as your lay leader this morning. Whoever and wherever you are in this moment, whether here or online, we want you to know that you're welcome. Regardless of your age or abilities, the color of your skin or where you were born, regardless of whom you love or how you identify your gender, if you do, whatever your spiritual practices may be, or if you have none, we're glad that you're with us this morning. If you're online, please see the order of service received in your email, and if you were not in our last email list, please email administrator@woof.org and Jen will get you added. As a reminder, we have online coffee hour via Zoom at 11:30 and in-person coffee, tea, etc. downstairs following the service. Today you'll see when we get to the service, it's a special service where we do talk about tarot card readings and we'll actually have some folks downstairs. So if you want to trip into something new, if you haven't done that before, feel free. So we'll see you there.
Bye.